Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my two-year-old toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Tony Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie.
Hello, everyone. I'm excited to have Amanda Beattie as the guest today on the Perimenopausal Mamas podcast. Amanda Beattie has been working in the health and wellness industry for almost a decade. She was originally a corporate wellness consultant, and she's migrated her practice to focus more on individual wellness, leaving the systems-based corporate wellness world behind. Armed with a degree in nutrition and nutraceutical sciences, Amanda and her husband, John, a doctor of naturopathic medicine, built a thriving practice that specializes in autoimmunity. Amanda likes to call nutrition her gateway drug into the world of healthy living and wellness. She spent most of her 20s working to heal her body through food. Realizing the power that food choices could have on her entire life, she's expanded her skill set to include personal development and self-actualization. Amanda's latest focus has been on creating wellness tools for moms. From parenting strategies to navigating food aversions in children, a family-forward approach to nutrition is where she spends a lot of time. Most importantly, however, she's been supporting mamas while navigating the identity shift that accompanies the transition into motherhood through self-care, self-love, and self-development. I'm so excited to have you here today, Amanda.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. I'll give everybody a little bit of background on how we met. So we met at a naturopathic reunion when you were the date of my naturopathic colleague and friend, Dr. John Beattie, who is now your husband and co-parent.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Was it a date? Were we, I guess it was that long ago.
It was, right? Yeah. You guys were still dating. And I remember we hit it off. We had a great conversation over some ciders. And then now you both have two children. So you have Hannah, a almost three-year-old girl, and Declan, an almost one-year-old. So wow, things have really changed since when we first met.
Oh yes, it's changed a lot. It's been quite the whirlwind, but it's a wonderful place to be right now.
I'm glad to have you as well because you have so many great tools and expertise and experience to share with our listeners. But before we dive into the meat of the interview, I wanted to ask you an icebreaker question. Are you okay with that?
Sure.
So if you could share with our listeners, what was the best parenting advice you've ever heard, received, or learned as you've gone through parenting these two children?
I would say, I mean, I guess this isn't super light like an icebreaker, but this was the most powerful piece of advice that I ever heard. And I learned it when my daughter was about 6 months old. And the piece of advice was that it's not our job to stop the crying all the time. Sometimes crying in itself can be a need. It can be a release for a release of stress, processing emotions, and that this can be a very important tool for everybody from children all the way up to adults. But that is not our job to stop the crying. It is our job to hold space and be the safe space for our children when they need to cry.
I love that. I know our natural inclination is to do what we can to stop it, but I do think, yeah, that's a great piece of advice because it could be their release of stress or processing of events during the day. So how do you, though, work through the crying when it's happening? Like, what's your strategy to not, you know, react and want to fix it right away?
Well, I spent the first 6 months of my daughter's life trying to stop it every which way. And for us, that usually looked like breastfeeding. Pretty much the second she made a peep, I was like, is she hungry? Is something wrong? And I would just nurse her. It was a wonderful privilege to have that. But that combined with her personality, she's a big, deep feeler, just like her mama. it actually ended up in her not sleeping. So pretty quickly we realized that if she couldn't release her feelings by crying, she legitimately would not sleep. Like she would be up every 15 minutes all night. So it became the better option when I realized that just holding space for her and helping her, you know, navigate her feelings, even at 6 months, would actually allow her to be at peace and be able to sleep calmly. As long as I was able to navigate those with her, like I would be there, hold space, just, you know, tell her she was safe and, you know, be that safe space for her, then she would sleep better. So it was a pretty easy cause and effect for me. So the second I started recognizing how powerful that release of emotions through tears in a safe space was for her, that she could sleep peacefully, it became very easy to navigate. And I can say that going, you know, using this strategy going to postpartum period a second time made it so much easier to navigate the cries with a newborn baby.
Amazing. That sounds, yeah, like it worked out really well. And that's what she needed to be able to learn how to soothe and put herself to sleep, and hence translates into parents sleeping and then being able to give back more to the family and to the kids and to developing healthy habits. So that's a great piece of advice. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Let's jump into the topic of today now. So as many listeners have toddlers, young kids, even older kids, we understand how challenging mealtime can be. Not only is it really difficult to get our kids to sit down at the dinner table, to be present and, you know, be ripped away from their playtime to eat, but also we have challenges with them trying new foods, not liking certain tastes or flavors. We need tools to navigate this stressful time or mealtime, which can be very stressful. So I'm excited to talk to you, Amanda, about some strategies that you've seen work firsthand. We can first talk about how do we create healthy habits for our family around food?
Well, first of all, I would say that the sooner you can get started, the better. Even prior to having kids, during pregnancy, that can definitely, you know, set the groundwork for developing these healthy habits as a family and just growing together as a family. But that doesn't mean that all is lost if you, you know, weren't able to do that. In clinic, I've worked with lots of parents, lots of children from, you know, small all the way up to teens. So I have some experience that way. Now, personally, my experience is in the small children phase. So that's where I'm coming from as a personal, my personal experience. So I would say that the very first thing to keep in mind is that stay focused on the long game. What's happening in this exact moment, this exact meal, this day is not the priority, but it's more establishing those, you know, foundational habits that you embrace as a family. So over the course of weeks, months, even years, you're trending upwards and really having those habits become ingrained. So the number one thing I would say is to, as often as possible, eat together as a family. Now, I will say that I very much appreciate that this is not always possible, especially multiple working parents and school and daycare and schedules and all of that. So I appreciate that this isn't always possible. But whenever you can, trying to sit down together as a family and prioritize that family meal, even if it's just dinner every day, or some families it might be breakfast every day, but really trying to at least once a day, if not twice, or, you know, several dinners a week, really trying to sit down at a table and eat together as a family, making sure that everybody's eating the same foods. And especially if you're working with younger children or children who are picky or going through a neophobic phase, then adjusting your meal as the parent, adjusting the parents' meals to reflect the needs of the child at that time, as opposed to cooking multiple things for multiple different family members.
I love that. Yeah, it's impossible to please all the tastes in the family. So it's picking, yeah, a meal, certain foods that the majority is going to enjoy.
Exactly. So when we were introducing solids to our children, we just pulled back on some of our, you know, our more favorite foods, like our very, very spicy things, or foods that contain ingredients that we wanted to delay introduction for. And we just, you know, did that. Like, we're the parents, it's our responsibility. So we just, you know, delayed those foods or ate them when, you know, when our children were sleeping, or, you know, having treats after they were going to bed. But really making sure that our meal reflected what we wanted them to eat and that we were all eating the same thing.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great tip for sure. I think, yeah, focusing on eating together at least one meal a day if possible, and then making the meal something the parents would enjoy too, but toning it down a bit in terms of like spice levels, or slowly starting to desensitize kids to more flavors.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Great. So that's one great strategy. Any other tools to help create healthy family habits around food?
Yeah. So this one is more of a kind of overarching philosophy. And my recommendation, both from personal experience, but also from clinical experience, is to really avoid using bribes, rewards, or punishments around food. Using, for example, using something like, if you finish your meal, you get dessert. So, a reward for finishing the meal actually can teach children to associate their goodness with clearing their plate. It helps to, or it unfortunately, dissociates their innate understanding of whether they're hungry or full. And instead they just, focus on that reward. And definitely using, bribery around, food just teaches children how to bribe to get what they want. And it can, we generally find it stops working pretty quickly, or the bribes have to get larger and larger. So instead of using those, those kind of tools that a lot of people try to resort to, because we just really want to have our kids eat nutritious food. So you can definitely see how it's easy to fall into that. But instead, trying to be mindful about your language. So instead of saying things like, if you finish your lunch, then you can have a popsicle. I'm going to use that example because that's what I'm dealing with daily right now in the summer. And it's just a simple shift in words and say, first lunch, then popsicle. So it's just more habit-based, as opposed to, because you finished your lunch, then you deserve this treat of a popsicle. It's just, nope, this is the order we do things in. So being mindful about your language, instead of saying, no, cookies aren't healthy for you for breakfast, saying, it's not time for cookies. If a kid's really strongly averse to something and, decides, especially, in the toddler years, to say, no, I don't like that, you can say something like, that's okay, maybe when you're older, and just keep it really light and stress-free, and not trying to, add any of those negative feelings around food.
I love that. Yeah. A lot of times, it is easy to bribe our kids to reward them with something sweet after if they finish their meal. But I like the idea of just letting them listen to their own bodies and make that decision. I do struggle sometimes because Stuart, one meal might eat a ton of food, and the next meal he might have two bites and say, I'm done. And I can't decipher, is he actually full, which I guess he probably is, or is he distracted and he wants to go play with his new bike or one of his new toys? So I guess listening to him and letting him make the calls without trying to bribe him. And then I like that idea of the order, like lunch first and then popsicle. It's not about you have to finish your plate, but this is what you'll get when lunch is done.
Right. And just remembering that long game, like even we watched this with Hannah, my toddler, who's coming up three, and we've practiced these habits since she started solids. And it's been really fascinating to watch that over the course of a couple of days, she usually evens out her macronutrient ratios, her vegetable intake, how much, like her volume of food. If we were to kind of add it all up and divide it across 4 or 5 days, it usually ends up pretty evenly. But she does the same thing where one day all she eats is carbohydrates. And we're like, oh goodness, like, can you please eat some vegetables or some fats? But then the next morning she'll, crush 2 eggs and a salad for breakfast. So she seems to still have that innate wisdom. And so we really try to just trust her instincts. Within reason, there are definitely foods that she'll, just drop everything and just only eat that. So, there are things that we do have to put some boundaries around, but trying to trust them. And along those lines, about them getting distracted, She definitely does. And one of the things I do is I let her leave the table and I leave her plate there. So if she's hungry later, she can continue eating her meal. She doesn't get a snack unless, you know, she's actually finished her meal and then is legitimately hungry. But generally, that can be an easy trick that they start to utilize is they say they're done. And then an hour later, they want a snack because it's their favorite food. So I say, well, if you're still hungry, your breakfast is still there or your lunch is still there or whatever it is.
Great. I haven't tried that, but I'm going to start to do that to see if he's, you know, got off his energy or burnt off his energy and played with that new toy. And then he's still hungry and he comes back, but it's available for him to eat the meal. That's a great idea. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other tips you want to share that have worked for you and your family?
Yes. And this is what I actually have my husband to thank for. So another great tip is to try to involve your kids as much as possible. And where he's really influenced our kids is he is a big gardener and we have some beautiful vegetable gardens. And I know that's a privilege. We have the space, we live in the suburbs, and he works from home. So he has the time to be able to do that. But even having like a herb garden or, you know, a windowsill garden, but really having her involved in the growing of the food and the choosing the food can be incredibly, incredibly powerful. Like her favorite thing to do right now is when people come visit, she wants to show them our peppermint patch and she picks peppermint leaves, which are just greens, and like forces people to eat them because she's so excited that she's grown it. So involving the kids as much as possible, whether it's growing your own garden, it can be big and over the top like my husband's, or just a couple of, you know, herbs that you grow from seeds in, you know, in your kitchen window, even just at the grocery store or farmer's market, having them choose things, having them choose the vegetable you want them to eat at dinner. Cause I definitely find that tends to be the biggest challenge that a lot of parents have with having their kids eat is getting those veggies in. And one of the tools that works really well for my child might work for some of your listeners. I mean, every child is different. But one of Hannah's favorite things to help me with in the kitchen is making a salad dressing. So she helps make the salad dressing. She gets to lick the spoon that had some honey on it. I always put some fresh strawberries or frozen strawberries in it. And so I make quite a sweet salad dressing. I just use some honey, some strawberries, balsamic vinegar, and a little bit of olive oil. And she's so excited to make the salad dressing. And then we put that salad dressing on her salad. And that really got her excited about eating a salad. And so she will usually, when she refuses to eat all other vegetables, which I'm a nutritionist, my husband's a naturopath, and my three-year-old does still refuse vegetables. But we can usually get her to eat the salad because she loves the salad dressing and she's been involved in making it.
Amazing. When you mentioned she would have eggs and salad for breakfast, I wanted to ask you, how do you get her to eat salads? My son, Stuart, just, you know, he likes the idea of a salad. I'm eating one and he'll take a few of the greens, but then he looks at it and hands it back to me. But I like that idea of making the dressing together. He can taste it, lick the spoon, and then he may actually try the salad greens if the dressing is on it.
Yeah. And keep in mind, like she gets a spoonful of honey while we're making the salad dressing. So it's just that fun, positive thing. And I get her to use an immersion blender. So she gets to use this fun tool in the kitchen that's, you know, she has to be careful with because it's sharp. So that really suits her personality. But along that, just a side note about the salad is I chose a vegetable that was Hannah's favorite. And a lot of kids like cucumbers, and that's definitely one of Hannah's favorite vegetables. So all of her salads are cucumber based. So I chop a cucumber into like small bite-sized chunks. And then I just finely dice some greens on top of the cucumber. So it's like a cucumber salad with some finely chopped greens, maybe some shredded carrot if I have it. But it's really just chopped cucumbers with a little bit of salad dressing and a little bit of stuff on top of it, maybe some goat cheese. So I started with the vegetable that she was most comfortable with, and then I slowly started adding more and more. And now she'll just like eat my, she usually steals my bowl of salad if I have it, and she'll just eat it the way I do.
That's brilliant. I need to, Stuart loves cucumbers, so I should chop up a bunch, start to add higher and higher amounts of chopped up greens, and then put that dressing on and other vegetables he's enjoying. So wow, these are some great tangible tools to start to implement right away.
Yeah. I did have one last thing that I wanted to mention, and this is kind of like an overarching philosophy. And my husband and I like to talk about having children and raising children as an opportunity to check in with our own habits and our own biases. So, you know, really try and identify what it is that we want, or we would love to have our children, what their health habits around food be, and try and identify if those are our own health habits. I've had parents be like, tell me that, you know, oh, my husband and I are both picky. Hopefully my child isn't picky. But what you do is way more important than what you say. So you have to model the behavior that you want to see. So if, you know, if you identify as a picky eater, if you realize that you have habits or biases, like for example, that vegetables don't belong at breakfast, then we can't ever expect our children to not have those either. So use it as an opportunity to try to like repattern yourself and retrain yourself and identify those habits and biases.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really important to step back and see what are we modeling for our kids? What are they picking up on? Because they are the great observers and mimickers. So I think that's a good activity for parents to take part in, is to really analyze our beliefs around food and our routines so that we can instill the healthy habits in our kids.
Exactly.
And now to the picky eating component. I see on Instagram, so you're at Amanda Naturally, and you have a great blog, amandanaturally.com, that I forgot to mention. I visit it often because there's some mouth-watering recipes that everybody needs to try. You also have some great tips on how to stay healthy while traveling and how to use more natural cleaners, body care products, and skincare products. But I see on your Instagram feed and through some of your posts, you know, the kids are eating sauerkraut, they're eating olives, they're eating liver and pate. So how is that possible?
Well, we live and breathe this stuff. So this was a major priority for us. Even before we got pregnant with our, with my eldest, we had the opportunity to think about this stuff early and implement it from the get-go. So if you are able to consider these things while you're pregnant, or if you have the privilege of being able to breastfeed, you know, recognizing that the foods that you eat during pregnancy and breastfeeding impact taste bud development, and you know, it actually changes the flavor of your milk. So those are two opportunities to start introducing flavors way before a child is even eating food on their own. So I definitely did all of that. I definitely did more of that when I was pregnant the first time and ate a lot more cheese and crackers when I was pregnant with a toddler running around. So full disclosure. But honestly, the main philosophical strategies that I was chatting about earlier have been a constant with my children since they were starting solids around 5 or 6 months. But I do have some like kind of quick hacks that we just use every single day. And one of those is we serve vegetables at every single meal. Without question, there is something green, or maybe cauliflower if it's white, but there is a vegetable on the plate at every single meal. And our kids just watch us eat vegetables at every single meal. And they just started copying us. So one of our philosophical approaches to raising children is to respect them as an individual and to not add unnecessary stressors to their life. And one of the very few areas that children have complete and total control over is what they put in their mouth. So we make an effort about not adding any stress to meals. So when we go through picky seasons, which definitely happened when my toddler turned about 2.5, is when it really kicked into high gear. We just kept on focusing on the foods that she does like. And like I said, cucumbers are always a go. So there was probably a couple weeks on end where the only vegetable she ate was a cucumber. And then we slowly brought back in the salads and just slowly started expanding her her repertoire again, but starting with those foundational foods that we knew she liked. When it comes to the really strong foods like pate and sauerkraut, both my kids love them and they have since the get-go. And it's funny that most of the children that I know who have been exposed to things like fish and pate from a really early age, they all tend to love it. It was both my kids' first food, and they've never not liked it. The foods that they struggle with generally tend to be the plants. So yeah, I don't know if it's just mine or because they ate it early or because my husband and I like it. But yeah, sauerkraut and pate have been a staple and a constant ever since the beginning. But when it comes to dealing with pickiness and trying to, you know, expand those horizons, a girlfriend of mine, who is also a nutritionist who focuses on picky eating in older children, she taught me the concept of what she calls a share plate. And so we take like a big cutting board and fill it with all sorts of foods that the kids love. And then they can pick and choose from that plate what they want to eat. And when we're trying to introduce a new food, that's how we'll do it. And we will add just one new food onto the plate so they can see it, observe it, see everybody eating it. And we don't even talk about it unless they ask us questions. There's no stress. There's no forcing them to try it. And usually after a couple of exposures, just visually, they'll start to be interested. And there's like that positive peer pressure, just seeing, you know, the other three of us eating it. And then usually the fourth kid, whichever one, will start to grab at it and be interested in it. So the share plate, which I have to give a shout out to my girlfriend, her handle on Instagram is Holistic Lee, because she taught me about this, is a very helpful tool for trying to expand children's palates, especially when we're dealing with pickiness.
I love that, because Stuart or most toddlers want to eat off their parents' plate, and we try to mirror our plate to like represent what's on his plate. But I love that idea of no pressure, have familiar foods on there, and then put one new food on it each time that he can either choose to eat or not. So thank you for sharing. Those are some great actionable tools we can all start to implement.
You're welcome.
Now I want to move on to the segment of our podcast where we ask you, what is your mom must have? So this can be your favorite gadget, tool, book, or resource as a mom that you just can't live without. So Amanda, what's your mom must have?
Well, I'm going to stick along the lines of healthy eating habits as a philosophy for families, and recommend a book that was foundational for me. I, as I've said, have a like pretty much a medical degree in nutrition, and my husband's a naturopath, and so I was worried about being too clinical about nutrition and actually, creating disordered habits because of that. So I read a book called French Kids Eat Everything, and it was an incredible resource for balancing out that kind of clinical nutrition approach and a lot of the philosophies that have been foundational for how we deal with food and mealtime. We were able to use from that book, and it's absolutely fabulous. It's about a mom as a Canadian mom. I believe she was from Vancouver, and she had, I think, a 4 and a 6-year-old, and her husband was from France, and they decided to move to France for a year. And she was, stuck in that challenge that so many of us find where the, children would only eat, Kraft dinner and cheese and crackers, and would only eat snacks and not meals. And that is absolutely not how they do things in France. And so it's her, it's all about her experience, shifting her children to more of a French way of eating. And there's some incredible tools, incredible approaches to just food in general, in that book. So I recommend people are surprised. That's the nutrition book I recommend to all moms. When they ask what nutrition book, I tell them to get that one.
I love it. I think on your recommendation, it was actually where I listened to the audio book and I got so much great information out of it. And just, it's questioning the concept of the kids menu versus the adult menu and even snacking. And is that necessary? So I think that's a great resource for all moms to check out if you haven't already.
Yes, absolutely. Was it good on audio? I haven't listened to the audio version.
It was. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So it was when I'd be walking Stuart in his carrier or in the stroller, because that's where he would do his best napping when he was right. Really young. So I would have loved to have read the book, but I didn't have the chance to sit down and do that with him. But the audio book is really good as well. So I'd recommend that.
Oh, that's good to know. Thanks for that tip.
No problem. Well, Amanda, I'm sure people want to learn more from you and get some of your recipes and tips and tricks. So what is the best way for people to reach you, follow you, or contact you?
Well, I have a blog, which you mentioned earlier. I'm at amandanaturally.com. I am not as active on there. Actually, I haven't been in recent years with two tiny children. So where I spend most of my time is actually on Instagram. So it's also Amanda Naturally there. I have a Facebook page as well. But again, not there very frequently. So really the best place to get a hold of me is at Amanda Naturally on Instagram. I'm really active on stories, which is one of my favorite tools for showing like how I'm doing things in the moment, parenting hacks, food hacks with my kids. So come visit me over there and be part of the conversation.
Great. I look forward to learning more from your stories and then from chatting, hopefully having you again on a future episode. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Lisa. This was great.
Oh, you're welcome. Take care.
You too.
Wow, Amanda really provided some great tips and insights on how to work with picky eaters and get them to try new things. There was definitely a few things that stood out for me. So really focusing on the long game. So yes, if Stuart's just eating carbohydrates one day and he doesn't want to touch his veggies or protein or fat, he'll most likely make up for it the next day or over the course of the week. So I'm really going to try to keep that in mind instead of stress over each individual meal. And also, Stuart's becoming a bit more picky as he's getting older. He's almost three by the time I'm recording now. And he says, I don't like that. I don't like that. But I really like the idea of saying to him, okay, that's okay. You don't like it yet. Maybe you'll like it when you get older. Or maybe you'll like it later or another time. So it's not a finality. So he doesn't associate himself with not liking Brussels sprouts. It just might be for the meantime. So I think that's another really good tip as well. And I will use that trick of leaving the plate out if Stuart is not interested in eating in that moment, and then he'll have some healthy options later after he takes a break from playing as opposed to going to any snack foods. So I hope you got a lot out of that recording. I surely did. Right now I'm going to cover my super mom moment. So this is going to tie into eating as well. So as Amanda was talking about, you know, it's really important to get your kids involved early into food prep, figuring out, you know, and learning where foods come from. So luckily my husband takes Stuart shopping every week and we try to take him to farmers markets as well so we can see where the food is coming from. And we do make a point to show him how food grows. So right now we don't have a garden, but his daycare provider did. So he could see some fruits and vegetables growing in the backyard, or we show him on different TV shows where fruits and vegetables come from. So he really gets that. But our main floor is actually one big room. So the kitchen's attached to the TV room. So Stuart sees us preparing dinner. And when he was probably about two and a half, he started to show a big interest in getting involved in the kitchen. So now every morning he'll help make his breakfast. So that might be during the week something really quick, like putting together some oatmeal. He'll serve his into a bowl. We have a pre-made batch. He might add some protein powder, some hemp seeds. He might add a bit of coconut chips, for example, whatever type of milk, like almond milk, for example, or hemp milk, he'll add to that. And then we try to get him to add some spices as well. So like cinnamon and ginger. So he's used to some different flavors. Lately, he's liked to add in carob powder. So right now I'm off of chocolate. I'm doing a month detox, so I haven't had any chocolate for a while. So another addition he likes to put in his oatmeal is the carob powder. So I think he tells everybody at daycare that he gets chocolate in the morning, but it's actually a carob powder. So we're exposing him to different flavors as well as he's involved in the kitchen. And he also likes to make smoothies as well. So I'll put the food processor on the floor and we'll add different ingredients to it. So it might be a banana carob peanut butter smoothie with some avocado in there, some protein powder, some almond milk, or he might make a nice berry smoothie as well. So he's really involved. Now I guess I have to share a mom mess up. So this one's pretty intense. I'd have to say I was really upset about it, but I'm willing to share now. It's been a few weeks, but I took Stuart downtown on a Sunday and we went to Italy. So it's a great kind of Italian market with lots of options for food and shopping. So he really likes going there because he can look at, you know, the lobsters in their tanks. He can walk around with a shopping cart and pick different things out. So we had a really great time. And then I took him over to Indigo. I was trying to find a book to read on health. So he was content. He had his own little cart and he was putting books into the cart. And I just walked away for about 5 seconds. It felt like I was trying to find the health section. And then all of a sudden I heard this man yelling from the second floor. There was a big like balcony overlooking the escalators, but I didn't even know the escalators were there. We were around the corner. So all of a sudden I heard this yelling and it didn't sound coherent. I thought this man might have had some challenges or was having an episode of some sort. But then I heard the words escalator and kid. And then I heard Stuart crying. So my heart stopped in that moment and I looked back and he was gone. So I raced around to where the man was yelling, you know, where he was looking as he was yelling. And I saw Stuart lying on the escalator. He was about halfway up and he was crying. I was expecting to see something way worse, but he definitely was really shocked. So I don't know, mom mode kicked in and I don't even really know what happened, but I ran up the escalator and grabbed him. And I guess in the meantime, someone had stopped the escalator. I brought him back down and I checked him all over and he seemed to be okay. He had a bit of grease on his face and hands, poor little guy. And the man, though, continued to yell at me and he said, I can't believe you mothers. You shouldn't have kids. You know, you leave your kids and look what happens. He could have been seriously hurt. And I was just in shock. I think I yelled a few words back and then just brought my attention back to Stuart. Luckily, another mom came over and said to me, you know, that man, he should not be yelling at you. I've been there. I've had kids where they've walked away and gone up the escalator. You're doing a great job. Don't worry about it. So that really made me feel a lot better. And I was just really glad that Stuart wasn't hurt. I was expecting to see him at the top, maybe with his jacket stuck in the escalator. So that definitely was a mom mess up. So a reminder, don't even look away, you know, for 5 seconds. Well, granted, we're going to have to, but I guess I should have surveyed the area to see what potential hazards there were. So that was a big mess up. And now this week, I'll share my mom must-have. So like I was telling you how we like to add different spices to Stuart's oatmeal. We might add some to his smoothies. My mom must-have this week is the simple organic spices. Are they simply? I can't remember. It's one or the other. Simply or simple organic spices. So they're definitely, you know, fresh, high in antioxidants, not sprayed with pesticides. They had a lot of great variety and different flavor blends as well. And I think these are great to start to introduce to your kids. As Amanda said, you know, you can tone down your spice levels a little bit, but start to introduce them to the different flavors. So we've been adding spices to his oatmeal, to his smoothies. We even made some hot sauces recently because our friends host an annual hot sauce party and he got to try a little bit of that. I think you know, he needed some cucumber after to cool his mouth down, but really getting those spices and flavors in at a young age can potentially help them become used to those flavors and even enjoy them. Granted, there are some kids that just can't handle too much spice or flavor, but we do what we can. Anyway, that concludes the episode for the week. Dr. Tony will be back next time and we look forward to connecting with you then. Have a healthy week.